And whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Colossians 3:17. I am Rob West. God created man for his glory. That means everything we do should glorify God, including how we manage money. Chad Clark joins us today to talk about how FaithFi is helping God's people be more faithful stewards, all for his glory. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest today is Chad Clark, Executive Director here at FaithFi, and he has a passion for ensuring we are teaching God's financial principles. Chad, great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Chad, FaithFi recently came out with our annual impact report for 2024, and it has some incredible numbers that we'll talk about today. But first, I'd love for you to share why the work of this ministry, in your view, is so critical.
I really do believe that the work we're doing here is absolutely critical, primarily because it's what we see in Scripture. It's an area that is often not easy to talk about, which is money. But we see it both in the Old and the New Testament, how money and possessions often lead to pride, greed, and idolatry, which unfortunately in the Bible drew people's hearts away from God, and it continues to do the same to our hearts today.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Money issues are heart issues, and so we want to help God's people steward money wisely, but through the lens of a biblical worldview, right?
Absolutely. So the need to address our relationship with money from a biblical perspective is absolutely critical. And a recent study found that 94% of Christians don't hold a biblical worldview, which means they're being shaped more by the world than by God's word when it comes to finances. And that's why we exist, to equip and encourage Christ followers to adopt a biblical worldview of money and to live accordingly. At FaithFi, our mission is literally to equip Christians to integrate faith and financial decisions for the glory of God. And our vision, I love this, is for every Christian to see God as their ultimate treasure. We want to encourage and equip Christians to go from greed and idolatry to generosity that flows from a heart that treasures God above all else, which leads to peace and true contentment.
Yeah, it is really a game changer when that happens. Now, let's share with our listeners exactly how we do that.
Yeah, one of the biggest ways we do that is through this radio program. Every day, the Faith and Finance Show airs across the nation on over 1,900 radio signals and through our podcast. We reach an estimated 1.5 million weekly radio listeners, in addition to 825,000 annual podcast downloads. And this reach is impressive, but it's really about the impact the program has on individual lives. Like Walter from my home state in New Mexico, let's take a listen to his story.
I really recognize you as an accountability partner, really, with my finances. God has just been so good to me and my company over the years, and truly blessed. So I listen to you religiously, and I try to listen to those topics that are really relevant, which all it really is. It's God's money, and he allows me to earn it. And as you said, the more I make, the more I can give away.
I love how Walter says we're his accountability partner. That's such a great picture of the role we can play. But it's not just about the radio, Chad. It's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Another accountability partner for many people is the FaithFi app. Over 65,000 FaithFi app members are using the app to wisely steward what God has entrusted to them. And in that app, we have a robust FaithFi community of people asking questions and supporting each other on their stewardship journeys. But it's not only just people helping each other, but getting them connected to professionals such as certified kingdom advisors and certified Christian financial counselors.
Yeah, we added a big piece last year as well with our studies and devotionals, and now our publication, right?
Yeah, that's a really big piece of what we've now expanded the ministry to do in 2024, such as our study, Rich Toward God, a study on the parable of the rich fool, and our devotional, Look at the Sparrows, which addresses financial fear and anxiety. And these studies and devotionals are designed to help people really address the heart issues related to money.
Well, folks, as we continue all of this in the new year and so much more, we can't do it without you. As a listener-supported ministry, your support is critical. Now, between now and the end of the day tomorrow, December 31st, every gift is doubled because of some generous supporters. So would you consider a gift right now and go to faithfi.com and click give? Gifts of all sizes doubled. Faithfi.com, just click give. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance. So we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. In the news today, more than a third of Americans are having a difficult time keeping up with inflation. A new report by Bankrate shows that 37% of credit card holders have maxed out or come close to maxing out at least one card since the Fed started hiking interest rates. That was March of 2022. Most of those overextended borrowers blame the rising cost of living on their troubles. And as you might expect, it's hitting low-income individuals the hardest. Meanwhile, TransUnion has been tracking credit card use. They report that balances have shot up right along with inflation. Incredibly, the average balance today is just over $6,300. That's 5% higher than last year. Making this even more difficult is that the average credit card interest rate is now more than 20%, with half of all cardholders carrying a balance from month to month, according to Bankrate. You know, we can't emphasize enough the importance of living on a budget in these times. You've got to assign a job to every dollar that comes in. A budget or a spending plan allows you to do that. And so that's why we would say that the FaithFi app is a great resource for you. It'll help you identify areas where you can trim to make your dollars go further. You can download the FaithFi app at faithfi.com. Just click app or look for it in your app store. Again, that's FaithFi. Here's the way it'll work. You'll essentially create that spending plan, getting everything in there. You'll then automatically fund each of those envelopes. You're not moving money, but in the app, you're essentially allocating the balances of your funding account. So think your checking account, your savings account. You'll allocate those balances to specific envelopes. And then as the transactions come in, because you're going to connect up all of your credit cards and debit cards, then they'll automatically go into each envelope so you can see where you stand in every spending category in real time. That's crucial because here's what you don't want. You don't want to get to the end of the month and then look back and say, well, I missed it there, and oh yeah, I went over there. No, you want that information in real time throughout the month so you can make course corrections. The only way to do that is in an app like the FaithFi app. So check it out today. You can download it on our website, faithfi.com. Just click app or check it out in your app store. All right, let's begin to take your calls. We're going to begin in Illinois today. Hi, Debbie. How can I serve you?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
We had a situation recently that came to our attention. Was made aware that our elderly mom, 83 years old, she's living on Social Security and has a small pension of just $176 a month. She had gotten into some credit card debt, a lot of credit card debt, and we had no idea this was going on. And so she ran out her IRA to zero and, you know, just did not handle the funds well. Well, unfortunately, there's actually $77,000 total of credit card debt. About 45 of that is in arrears, and the rest of it she's maintaining on a minimum balance, okay? So the idea is, you know, we're thinking, well, the only option is, you know, we've checked it into bankruptcy Chapter 13, but the amount would be too much for her to pay, you know, because the reorganization would be like between $1,450 a month and $1,688 a month, and so that she wouldn't have anything left, and we cannot take on that debt. She doesn't qualify for any kind of equity loan or anything, and we're not going to do a reverse mortgage. But moving forward, we just decided, okay, the best idea is to sell the home. And I'm running this by you, you know. And I want your thoughts and feedback, please. But, you know, to sell the home and then, you know, pay the creditors with the proceeds, work deals with them, hopefully, on some of these debts. And then to take those proceeds and put them in some type of a interest-bearing account, you know, whatever's left over from the sale of the home for her benefit. However, because of her spending patterns, we're kind of worried, you know, well, it's just not going to happen where she can have access to those funds. It has to be approved, the withdrawals. And so I don't really know. First of all, I guess my question is, do you think the plan moving forward is solid? Do you have some suggestions with regard to that? And then what kind of a fund could we set up for her where she can't access the funds and, you know, and deplete those as well? I hope that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, it sure does. So I guess the first question is, yeah, just the debt. So you said it's nearly $80,000. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the value of the home?
It's between $250,000 and $275,000.
Okay. And do you have any debt on it whatsoever?
No, it's paid.
Okay. So let's say it's worth $250,000 and, you know, you end up getting, after 6%, you know, for fees and so forth, you know, you get $235,000 and then you pay off the $80,000, you're going to have about $155,000 left. Then where would she live at that point?
Well, we're looking into, you know, senior living, 55 plus apartments. You know, she can do an independent living. I was hoping that we might be able to get her into, depending on the financial situation after all of this, that we might be able to get her into a place where it's like a senior community based on her income, because everything is right there. You know, they've got activities for the seniors. She wouldn't be lonely. So there's two options there. I'm not exactly sure. So, but if we got into something like that, they would take all the assets. So I guess I'm more looking for, if she gets into just a 55 plus senior home, that she can maintain on her Social Security, because she will not have all this debt, but have this excess as well for, you know, to help her, you know, live in a nicer area too. So that's the idea anyway.
Yeah, no, I certainly get that. Well, I think with regard to, you know, how that $155,000, the proceeds are handled, obviously this is her home and her name only, which means these are her assets. So the only way that you'd be able to step in and manage that is by having a court declaring her incompetent, unable to do so. Apart from that, your mom would have to consent to you managing the money on her behalf and, you know, essentially putting her on an allowance, because even if it's in a trust, it's still her money. And so she can do what she wants with it. If separately you're talking about kind of shielding this from Medicare recovery, because, you know, Medicaid could kick in and take care of part of this, but it would mean that her assets level generally for an individual are down below $2,000. So all of this would have to be depleted. And then there's income limits as well. The only way around that is through a Medicaid asset trust, which is irrevocable. So essentially she relinquishes ownership. And then, you know, there's some other things, but there's a 5-year look back. You also have to think about just ethically whether you're comfortable with that. That's going to be something you'd want to talk to an estate planning attorney about. But I think at the end of the day, you know, the nice thing would be, I like her getting out of debt. I like the fact that there'd be some good money there left over that could pay off, you know, pay out. You could pull $500 a month, you know, $6,000 a year from this to supplement Social Security if you could put her on a good solid budget. Stay on the line. We'll talk a bit more off the air. We'll be right back. Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. I had a chance to visit a bit more with Debbie off the air. And, you know, here's the reality. She has the power of attorney. The problem is, or the challenge is, that her mom is mentally competent, even though she has some spending challenges. And so she's going to have to be willing to submit herself to her daughter in this case. So assuming we get the debt paid off, the key is not to repeat the situation that she got in the first place. So, you know, if we pay off the credit cards and then she continues to spend beyond her means, it's only a matter of time before the debt gets run back up. But if she's willing to live on just a modest income from the $155,000 plus Social Security and not, you know, cut up the credit cards, which is going to be key, then, you know, this can work. So grateful that Debbie's there to walk alongside her. And let's just pray that her mom's willing to work with Debbie and perhaps an advisor who would be managing this money in the days ahead. But Debbie, we'll certainly be praying for you as you navigate this. I know this can be challenging, especially when parents are involved. Let's go back to the phone. Chicago's where we're headed next. Bernie, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Love your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
The question is, I was thinking of buying these two single-family homes. They're both $250,000 each. I have property that's worth $7 or $8. What is the implications if I want to sell a multi-level and buy homes? Is there something I need to know other than the standard, you know, closing costs and all that? The multi is a mortgage free. Nothing owed on it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the you can do a 1031 exchange, which is also known as a like kind exchange, and you can exchange an apartment building for rental single family homes because both types of property qualify as like kind under the IRS section code 1031. It defines that term like kind pretty broadly, and that's why both of those, because they're used for investment or business purposes as opposed to personal use, can be, you know, factored into the 1031 exchange. So that just simply means you'd be able to sell the apartment building so long as you followed the timing of identifying the next properties within 45 days, closing on them within 180 days. You essentially kick the can down the road with respect to the capital gains tax on that multifamily property, which is a good thing because you don't have to pay that now. You could pay it later and get full use of this money moving forward. I think the key would just be that you find those properties that make sense. Don't get over levered because we don't want you to be in a situation where, let's say, the economy were to take a pretty significant downturn and you went for a longer period of time than you expected without a renter. I just don't want you to put yourself in a difficult spot. But assuming you go in with enough equity, you can take advantage of the 1031. You clearly are going to have those costs on the sale of the property, and so you need to factor that in because that's going to come out of the proceeds of the sale. But assuming you account for all of that and you like the idea of switching the multifamily for the multiple single families, then it certainly can be done.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my time to answer my question. Thank you so much.
All right. God bless you, Bernie. Thanks for calling today. To Indiana, WGNR. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rob, it's just a couple different questions. One, I heard you a little earlier, but when looking for a mortgage company when buying a home, I would like to be able to put down at least half, I know, to purchase another one in the future, because I actually have two homes to sell. I'm just going to have to stagger them, I know, one this year and then one later. But I didn't know if there's any key questions to ask mortgage companies or what to look for, definitely for interest rates to get it as low as possible.
Okay. Yeah, so you're looking to sell two properties and then you're going to take the proceeds and buy just one new property, or are you going to buy multiple?
We're just going to buy one property, and we're hoping to spend anywhere from $400 to $450, what we're seeing, the price range around our area here. You know, like I said, we'd like to put like at least half down to get that payment down and go to a 15-year mortgage. But I don't know if any mortgage companies, there's any better questions to ask or what to look for.
Yeah, very good. Well, I like your plan a lot. I mean, I think the key is to start with, assuming you have good credit, I suspect you do, you're going to want to make sure, number one, you get a really competitive rate. Unfortunately, rates have ticked back up, so we're now up over 7%, which is not ideal. Now, am I hearing, though, that when you sell the second property, eventually you will be free and clear, or do you plan to keep this mortgage in place even beyond the sale of the second home?
When we sell both homes, they will be completely paid off, and the additional proceeds will be going to purchasing another home. We'd like to have new, but we definitely do not have to. And we'd just like to take that money and spend the majority of it by putting a good share down on the new home. Yeah. Maybe have a little left over, especially if it's a existing home. Some need to be a little updated, and we're willing to do that if needed, but just want cash on hand to do it.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, so I would start with that interest rate. Make sure you're getting a competitive offer. I think second is the range of loan types. Now, you probably are just going to take a conventional loan, but to the extent you wanted, you know, you qualified for a VA loan or something like that, you'd want to make sure that they offer those. You're going to want to certainly look at the fees and closing costs. So what are those origination fees for processing the loan? You know, compare that with other charges like appraisal, credit report, underwriting fees. You want a lender that's upfront and transparent about all those fees. So you don't want any of that on the back end. You want them to be, you know, provide you everything right up front. And then I would just do some reviews on their reputation. You could look at online reviews just to see, you know, what are people saying about them in terms of their responsiveness, their pre-approval process, loan processing times, those kinds of things. I'd also make sure you get at least three bids, and I'd probably get one of them from our longtime underwriter here at Faith and Finance, Movement Mortgage at movement.com/faith. But they're all pretty standard, and again, you're not going to be with this for too long, and they're probably going to sell the servicing to someone else anyway. So the key is get those low costs, get that competitive rate, and you should be in good shape. Thanks for your call. Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions. The lines are filling up, so let's jump right in. We're going to begin today in Lincoln, Nebraska. Renee, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you for having my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I've got a grandson that has been accepted into aviation flight training, and he so wants to do that. That's his goal in life, but it is prohibitive because of the cost. They're asking $1,400 a month with 15% interest. That's their loan. The second year, the loan goes up to 20%. Thought maybe you could give me some ideas of where to get a loan for something like that, or some other place to go, or...
Yeah, let me ask you, is the flight school accredited, and could it possibly be eligible for some federal student loans?
Well, I asked him that. I don't think they do Pell Grants.
Okay.
I don't know about, I don't know.
There are other types of, again, if it's an accredited program and university, flight school, it could be available, you know, offer the direct unsubsidized loans or what are called the direct plus loans. So he could check to see if the school is eligible to participate in the federal financial aid programs, just call the financial aid office. If you're talking private lenders, I mean, yeah, what you described is really high. So we're going to want to look at some other options. There are some bank and credit unions that offer loans for flight training. He'll want to, of course, compare the interest rates, the repayment options, and the terms. A couple of those private institutions lending for flight schools, I'll give you four names. One would be Sallie Mae. The other is Wells Fargo, SoFi. That's just SOFI. It's a fairly new kind of player on the market here. And then Discover would be another one. I think the other thing is just make sure, to the best of his ability, he's committed to finishing his education in order to take out those loans, because it's already difficult enough to pay back loans if you're employed in your field of training, but it's obviously much more difficult if you're not employed and not earning the commensurate higher salary based on the degree you were seeking, or in this case, the training. So I would just make sure he's committed. But yeah, I'd do your homework, starting with that financial aid option through the federal loan program. And then if not, you know, looking at a few of these other private lenders that I mentioned.
Okay, yeah. Well, he's just graduate. He's going to graduate midterm from high school. So this isn't a college. It isn't done through a college at all. It's just, I don't know.
Got it. Okay. So it very well may not be an accredited program, and so it may be that you have to look at those private lenders. But I just wouldn't accept what they're offering as the best option, especially given the rates and terms you're describing here. I'd go out on the open market and look for some other private lenders, perhaps a few of that I mentioned, do some research online, see if you can find some others that might be worth considering to get a more favorable option for him. But listen, all the best, Renee. It sounds like he's got a great track here. If he can see it through, hopefully borrow as little as possible, maybe do some work on the side and try to pay as much as he can out of pocket, borrow as little as he can. Hopefully he'll be able to get a job that will allow him to pay this back in a reasonable time period. I'm delighted to hear, though, that you're walking alongside of him. God bless you. Let's go to Alabama. Hi, Jerry. How can I help you?
Fine, Rob. I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a neighbor that I could possibly buy his property in a life estate versus a reverse mortgage. I would just like to advise the person the best way to go to financially suit them. I would be interested in buying it in a life estate, which simply means we'll have a great value. I pay for it, and they live there until they expire. So this gives them the way to stay at home and have money. But the reverse mortgage might also be a better avenue. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a good question. Are you thinking about buying it at a discount in exchange for that life estate?
Well, yes, sir. It's kind of, he's older and it's kind of in the stage of depreciation and need a lot of work and stuff. So I don't know that the value will continue to go up. And of course, if I take the money out of investments in the stock market and put it into the property, then I'll lose the advantage of it going up in the stock market.
Yeah.
But that's a risk that you have to take either way, sir.
Yeah, no, I get that. And give me just a sense of what kind of equity he has in the home.
Okay, the assessed value of the property is $190,000.
All right. And what does he owe on it?
It's really grown up in the last 8 years. I mean, it'll...
Okay.
It's not really improved or taken care of good.
Sure. Does he have a mortgage on it?
No, sir.
Okay. Yeah, so the question would be, you know, what would he need to get out of it? So if he were to take a reverse mortgage, I mean, is there a shortfall every month? Is it really just a matter of the upkeep that he can't afford, or is he looking to subsidize his income just for basic living expenses?
Probably both.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, I'm not sure what's the fair market offer, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going to be tough because you've got to determine, I mean, you know, oftentimes you're buying it at a lower cost, depending on the terms and your situation. Yeah, you've got, you know, the expenses related toward you getting the property up to par to maintain it. You know, obviously the ongoing carrying costs associated with it have to be factored in as well. And then there's just the, you know, the delay before you're actually going to be able to take occupancy and, you know, convert this back into a liquid asset that you could then do something else with. So you'd need some help from a real estate professional determining what that real market value is based on those issues there with the life estate. I think if we start by looking at just what he's trying to accomplish, obviously, you know, the reverse mortgage has its benefits in the sense that he could get a monthly income stream, or he could take a line of credit, or both. Maybe he gets a certain portion out up front in terms of cash that he could use to fix up the property, and then takes the remaining portion and converts that into an income stream for life. So he's both getting the home up to, you know, a livable status, and, you know, where there's not any kind of issues that might lead to further damage. And he's allowing himself to get an income stream. And then as long as he's able to pay the property taxes and insurance, he can live there the rest of his life, and whatever equity's remaining at his death, would then be available to both pay off the reverse mortgage and then be available for heirs or for charitable giving. The nice thing about the life estate is obviously you're taking all of that off of him. And so it's really a matter of, are you willing to kind of bear that burden of the upkeep of the property, being responsible for it? You know, I think that would be nice for him. Then the question would just be, with the proceeds that you pay him for that life estate, could he then turn that over perhaps to an advisor that could then invest that where he's getting an income stream that, you know, would match his needs? So I think there's maybe some additional work here that needs to be done just in terms of financial planning. Both have their benefits. I think with the life estate option, he has less of a burden on him. You're carrying more of that responsibility. And if that would ultimately give him the income he needs with that reduced purchase price that you would pay him that he could then invest, that's great. Again, if you're willing to take that on. If you don't want that kind of obligation and upkeep in the future, I think the reverse mortgage could be a great option. And our friends at Movement Mortgage could help. Movement.com/faith. So perhaps start by connecting with a real estate professional, figure out both what needs to be done to bring it up to par, what would be the purchase price, and consider, are you willing to do it? And then have him get a quote on that reverse mortgage and compare the two. We'll be right back. Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions. We'll get to as many as we can. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Hello. I apologize for asking about something you've already talked about, but our church is going into a building fund, and we would like to make what's for us as retirees a substantial donation, but I wanted to know, I think it was the donor advised fund or a way that you could give the church more rather than paying taxes.
Yeah. Where is the money coming from? Is it coming from a qualified retirement account like an IRA?
It's an IRA, yes.
IRA, yeah. So a donor advised fund would not help in this situation. You're probably thinking of what's called a QCD or a qualified charitable distribution. Marilyn, are you all 70 and a half or older?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So with an IRA, as long as you're at least 70 and a half, you can do what's called a qualified charitable distribution, where you would make a gift directly from your IRA to, in this case, your church. You don't take the distribution yourself and then turn around and give it. It goes right from your IRA, whoever the custodian is that sends you your monthly statements. You'll call the company or your investment advisor and say, I want to make a qualified charitable distribution. They'll send a check, and you can do up to $105,000 for 2024. They'll send that check directly to the church. And then by doing so, the money will not be added to your taxable income for the year. So that's the only way to get it out of an IRA without it, you know, having to be taxable. And if you all had a required minimum distribution, this would also go to satisfy that. Now, you may not, because those don't kick in until 73. But if you do have it, you're satisfying the RMD. But regardless of whether or not that's your intent, it's a great way to give more than you thought possible because it's coming out of your IRA. And again, it's the only way to get it out of the IRA without paying tax on it.
Okay, great. That was the name and I couldn't think of it. So
okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Qualified charitable distributions, what you're looking for. Thanks, Marilyn. Lord bless you. I appreciate your desire to be generous. Let's see. We're going to go to Marcy in Austin. Hi, Marcy. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if a FICO credit score has an impact on car and home insurance premiums. For example, if I had a low credit score, will I pay more for my car and home insurance premium than if I had a high credit FICO credit score?
Yeah, typically you will. So credit-based insurance scores are pretty widely used, although they're just one of many factors that an insurer will consider when setting premiums. So absolutely, it's yet another reason to maintain a good credit score, not go into debt and pay interest to keep your credit score high, but just following good, sound money management principles of keeping your debt levels low, primarily what's called credit utilization, meaning the debt that you owe versus the limit, is under 30%, better than that, under 10%, paying all your payments on time, making sure you have a good credit history, a good credit mix, meaning different types of credit. So revolving and, you know, credit card debt, installment loans like a car loan, things like that. But again, it's not worth taking out a loan specifically to maintain a good credit score, because I don't want you to pay a dime of interest just to maintain your credit score. But just by following good money management practices, you're going to have a better score over time. And if you've had some mistakes or challenges in the past that led to a poor score, you know, just by being an on-time payer and keeping those balances low, it will improve itself over time. But it's, you know, important to shop around, of course, when you're looking for, new property and casualty insurance. The rate or the premium is not the only factor, because you want to make sure you're with a reputable company who's going to serve you well in a time of need and, make sure that they get good reviews. But, yeah, to answer your question, there are certainly credit-based scores do factor in. And the impact is going to vary in terms of how significant that credit score is considered. It's going to vary pretty significantly by insurer. Some use it pretty heavily. Others use it very minimally or not at all. And so there's not kind of a one-size-fits-all there.
Okay, that helps. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for calling today. Let's go out to Nashville. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, Rob, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you and your team. So my parents have been married 68 years. My mom recently died, and the credit card that they were using for everything they do was in her name. When my dad called to transfer the name, they said, if she's deceased, the account has to be closed. So they shut it. But coincidentally to that, 10 years ago, he froze his own credit because there's some fraud stuff going on in some of their credit card lines. And so he just froze his credit and never unfroze it. So when he goes to apply for a credit card twice, he gets denied as a poor credit risk. And so now he is in a situation living in assisted living where he has to pay bills electronically. He doesn't have any means to get a credit card, a credit line. So any advice there?
Yeah, well, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom's passing. I'm not surprised that it was closed, because if, in fact, he was an authorized user rather than this being a joint account, that is just the standard protocol. The contract was with the deceased person in this case, not the authorized user. Tell me a little bit more. Is it just that he froze his credit, or was what else is going on here that's preventing him?
Sure. He unfroze it, and so they allowed him to go. But because he hasn't had any credit history for over 10 years, three credit card companies have denied him, saying that he's a poor credit risk.
Got it.
And but he has no debt. He's got plenty of money in the bank. But just because his credit hasn't been used in 10 years, they won't consider him a credit-worthy 87-year-old.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that. And it's a shame, because if he was an authorized user, typically he should have been getting the good credit history of your mom while he was an authorized user, even though he wasn't technically a joint owner or the sole owner of that account. But it could have been one of those cards where they didn't allow that history to pass through to the authorized user, or when the account was closed, that's no longer being considered. Another option would be what's called a secured credit card. Are you familiar with that term?
I do. Yes, I know.
Yeah. So you could just do a quick online search for a secured credit card, you could find out who Bankrate.com could help you with this, or NerdWallet, find out who has the very best secured credit cards out there right now. It does change from time to time. It could be Capital One. It could be Discover. But, you know, he could put a few $100 on deposit. You said he's got plenty in savings. And that could be a way to start building his credit, using that for just budgeted recurring items. He could also become an authorized user on your account. And so that would help him build his credit history. He doesn't have to have access to the card, you know, but that way your credit history would pass through. Now, if you ever had a mispayment because something happened and it slipped up on you, that would pass through as well. So you just got to be careful there. The other thing is, have you pulled a copy of his credit report just to make sure there's not any erroneous or inaccurate information?
Not yet. This has all occurred in the last 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
I did actually make him an authorized user on my credit card and gave him permission to use that. But the other thought I had was a debit card. Does he have less protection using a debit card in place of a credit card, or is there too much risk in that?
In terms of fraud?
And fraud and access to his main bank accounts.
Yeah, the challenge with the debit card is, although there's similar protections as with a credit card, the problem is with a credit card, if somebody compromises your account and places fraudulent transactions, you don't have to pay anything. You just report it on a timely basis, and then they do all the work behind the scenes, to get the transaction canceled out. The problem with the debit card is the fraud occurs, the money leaves the account, and now you've got to wait for it all to be restored. And that, depending on how high your balance is and how much they took out, may result in, bounced checks and, missed auto debits and things like that. So I prefer the credit card for that reason, just because those fraudulent transactions don't cause any harm to you. As long as you identify them and report them, you're basically putting the onus on the credit card company to right the situation. Whereas with the debit card, they're still responsible, but you're out the money until it's been put back in or redeposited. So I think the best option right now is what you've already done with the authorized user, is allowing him to benefit from your timely and good credit history. That's going to take time, but it will get his score up, and could be that a year from now you find he applies for that credit card unsecured and gets approved. I think the secured credit card would be the second way to go ahead and help him start establishing some good positive credit history.
Okay, great insight, great advice, and thank you for the service you provide to all of us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I would go over to annualcreditreport.com with him maybe the next time you guys are together and just go ahead and pull a copy of all three reports, and let's just check and see and make sure there's not anything on there that's inaccurate or erroneous. If there is, you have the ability through the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or no, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, to dispute that. And they have 30 days to get that updated or deleted. So that could be another issue affecting him, where there's something out there that's wrong, or, not his, or something that's pulling that score down. Perhaps not, but in the case that there is, that would be worth knowing.
Okay, I'll get that done. Thank you for giving me a list of to-dos.
You're welcome. Anytime you need something on your to-do list, come my way. I'll assign you plenty of stuff to do. Hey, God bless you, Jeff. Thanks for serving your dad so well, and we appreciate you being on the program today. Well, that's going to do it for us today, folks. Always grateful for the opportunity to spend a few moments with you each afternoon, to be invited into your stories and encourage you from God's Word. Let me say thanks. Thankful for Sandy and Taylor and Devin and everybody here at FaithFi. Certainly couldn't do this without them and without each of you listening and calling. So thanks for being a part of the broadcast today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.